5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wendy Bell. Inspiring solutions to save America. One show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes. And I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. And I'm going to teaser-beezer you ahead to our third hour, because we're going to talk about the special counsel, Robert Hur. Special counsel no more. Dude quit his job with the DOJ yesterday, 24 hours before he was set to testify before Jim Jordan's House Judiciary. We're going to hear what Jim Jordan wants to ask him. The quitting part is a very interesting nugget. Why it happened and why the DOJ is losing their ever-loving minds about it. Hour number three, remember the podcast, Wendy Bell Radio. Get it, download it, love it, and share it. So here's your New York Post. Look, I mean, we all know the definition of insanity. We are so well beyond insanity. We are now in just abject decay. This is drunken spending that has no end. This is like my college roommate at the University of Colorado, who didn't just max out her own individual credit cards. She got credit cards in her sister's name and maxed them out too. Yeah, that's going to leave a mark, and it's going to be really hard to pay back because the interest rate is staggering. They prey on people like that. Well, this government is preying on us. You know, they said to us, nobody making less than $400,000 a year is going to see a penny raised in their taxes. Well, accordingly, it seems here 20 to 30%, Breitbart tells us, in fact, have already seen an uptick in their taxes. I told you last year I had 92,000 personal reasons why I was not ever voting Democrat. So this new massive $7.3 trillion budget. What do responsible people do when they're in the hole? Well, you got to admit you've got a problem. You got to sit down, you got to look in the mirror, and you've got to say, you know what? I have an issue. It's like the same thing with AA, drugs. I am an addict. I need to admit that I am an addict and I need to get help. Well, see, we don't even have step number one. They just dropped $7.3 trillion on us. Biden unveils massive $7.3 trillion budget with $5.5 trillion in tax hikes. Plans for the highest burden in U.S. history. This is the New York Post today. Now, is anybody surprised? Because if you're bringing over anywhere between 8 and we'll say 20 million people in Joe Biden's four. I mean, just think about that. Even my rudimentary math skills tell me that's a crap ton of people. And last time I checked, they're not coming over with industry. Will some of them have jobs? Are some of them skilled? Will some of them do things and contribute to America before they're deported? I would imagine so. But as it stands now, they're just sucking on the teat of your goodness, of your hard work. Why are you getting up and going to work every day? And are all these people who just stopped doing so, are they smarter than we, the rest of us who are still humping it? Maybe. I told you the story over the weekend how my husband Joe and I took our twins to Canton, Ohio for a soccer tournament. We couldn't get a hotel room in the hotel with the team. We were late getting to the reservation. And by the time we were ready to make the reservation or did, they were sold out, they said. They weren't sold out. They couldn't book the place because they don't have the people to staff it. If your job is a hotel and you don't have people cleaning the linens and cleaning the rooms and making the food in the lobby for the free breakfast, and they're not there to man the computers, and God forbid something goes haywire with the electronic keys, you don't have people on hand to run your business. You don't have a business. How many restaurants have you gone to? And you walk in and you meet the host and you say hi, party of whatever, and the place is half full. Half. There's lots of space. And they're like, well, it's going to be about 30 minutes. And you're like, what? Are you talking about? Yeah, we're short-staffed. This is everywhere. Everywhere. Does anybody think that giving millions and millions and millions of dollars to migrants who ought not be here, who broke the law to get here, who we know nothing about, many of whom are dangerous, do you think that they're all of a sudden going to hop to and be like, well, honey, got to go out the door, got to get to the job? No. And this budget reflects that. Highest burden in U.S. history. Well, that's building back better. That's Bidenomics. President Biden unveiled his election year budget pitch Monday, calling for $5.5 trillion in tax. $5.5 trillion. Trillion. Like, how many zeros is that? Is that nine? I have to look at it. Five, two, three, that's a million, that's a billion. Oh, my bad, it's 12. Whatever, just carry the one. What? $5.5 trillion in tax increases by raising rates on the wealthy and corporations. While spending $7.3 trillion on defense, federal benefit programs, affordable housing for migrants, and student debt cancellation. So, all of y'all who went to college and then paid off your debt, well, you're going to pay off all these people's debt, all these other people's debts too. How about all of y'all who didn't go to college? You're like, yo, it's too expensive. I don't have the money. I don't really think it's necessary. I'm going to go to a trade school. I'm going to go do this instead. You made that decision economically, practically. Well, you're paying off all of these sniveling elitists' bills as well. Sounds super inclusive, doesn't it? The fiscal year 2025 budget of suck, which is highly unlikely to be approved by Congress, matches last year's top line tax increase level and spends $300 billion more while purportedly cutting the federal deficit by $3 trillion over the next 10 years, the White House said Monday. How does that work? How do you spend money to save money? How do you spend money without raising taxes? How do you welcome people in and give them all the free crap so they settle in your community so you can redistrict and you can then send out the census and you can get more representatives, which is the game? Right? Whether or not it's getting these people to vote Democrat, it's certainly about having their bodies in a specific area so that you can get more representatives with D's after their name in Congress and the Senate. Period. $3 trillion it's going to cut the federal deficit? Bull crap. Fiscal hawks and Republicans alike quick to call out the administration for reckless spending. You know, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. This is where I would pay good money for a heckler just to scream down, you suck, all of you. I'll do it. So let's look at Biden's $7.3 trillion budget. What it outlines is plan to finish the job of destroying the country. So we got $5.5 trillion in tax hikes. I'm sure that won't impact you. Not increasing from roughly 18% of GDP to 20%. Now it's only just 2%. So. Even after the IRS collected a record $4.9 trillion in tax revenue last fiscal year. It's never enough. It's never enough until you say, hell no, I ain't paying massive corporate tax increases. What happens with corporate tax increases? Where does the money come from? Oh, that's right. You, when you go buy crap. Isn't that amazing? Giving the United States a higher business tax rate than communist China, killing 159,000 jobs, shrinking the economy by $720 billion, and cutting wages for low-income Americans. Building back better. Also billions of dollars for a supercharged IRS. More bean counters to sniff up your skirt. Even after it was successfully clawed back by Republicans. A second death tax. What? By removing the step up in basis upon certain inheritance. Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to work two jobs. My husband's going to go to medical school. He's going to get a fellowship in cardiology. He's going to get an additional program so he can be an interventional cardiologist, which means he can do stents and catheterizations and save your life before you have a heart attack. But we're going to pay more now and be able to give our children less of our money. Home buyer and mortgage tax credits, an admission that record mortgage rates and skyrocketing rents are unaffordable under Biden. And billions to train young workers on climate change. Stop it with the climate change. These are all codes for money laundering. Money, money, money. You're paying for it, right? Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll be here all week. I'm just getting started. When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, let's talk about this. Politico calls it a bloodbath at the RNC. We say that it's too little too late. Next. So this is exciting. This is exciting as the opening segment that I shared with you, that there's this mass push, this $62 million drive. With 30 million pieces of literature and 130,000 churches to register evangelical voters as Donald Trump supporters. That is huge. Organizing what? We Republicans, that happens? Really? We're woeful. Democrats kick our butts up and down with their ability to organize, activate, inflame, right? This is a great story. Politico, though, calls it a bloodbath. I don't know if it's a bloodbath when you get called on the carpet for doing a lousy job and you get fired. Bloodbath at RNC. Trump team slashes staff at committee. Bum, bum, bum. Well, duh. Too little too late, probably, but I'm glad to see something's moving. Donald Trump's newly installed leadership team at the Republican National Committee on Monday began the process of pushing out dozens of officials, according to two people close to the Trump campaign and the RNC. All told, the expectation is that more than 60 RNC staffers who work across the political communications and data departments will be let go. Those being asked to resign include five members of the senior staff, though the names were not made public. Additionally, some vendor contracts are expected to be cut. Can I just make a friendly suggestion? Hire Scott Pressler, the guy who has been a one-man wrecking crew. This man has registered thousands of voters, Republican. One dude. He travels all around the country. He puts it out on social media. Hey, I'm going to be in Sioux City. Let me know if you have an extra bedroom or a couch I can crash on while I go work for free. All of these various venues to show people, hey, it's easy to register to vote. Why don't you register Republican if you have our conservative values? And people open their homes to him. That's called grassroots. That's called thinking outside the box. That's called waking up and doing the damn job. And there's got to be a place for that in this RNC. Period. In a letter to some political and data staff, Sean Cairncross, the RNC's new chief operating officer, said the new committee leadership was in the process of evaluating the organization and staff to ensure the building is aligned with its vision. Trim some fat, right? We don't need 50 people to do four people's jobs. The overhaul is aimed at cutting what one of the people described as bureaucracy at the RNC. But the move also underscores the swiftness with which Trump's operation is moving to take over the Republican Party's operations after the former president all but clinched the party's presidential nomination. Trump's campaign took over operational control of the RNC on Monday, damn right. On Friday, former North Carolina GOP chair Michael Whatley was elected to the RNC's new chair, and Trump's daughter-in-law, daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, was elected as co-chair. Both, of course, had his endorsement. Additionally, Trump's senior campaign advisor, Chris LaCivita, was named as the RNC's new chief of staff. Now, that Laura Trump thing brings us to this story, which I think is great. And she said it out loud, gotta make it too big to rig. Talked about it briefly yesterday, this coming to you from the Gazette. I believe this is out of Colorado. Laura Trump promises legal ballot harvesting to be part of the new RNC strategy. They've got to be freaking out on the left. They're saying to themselves, wait a minute, we're so used to the comatose, right? Asleep behind the wheel, drive-by conservative people who don't get active. They might get fussy, but they're busy and they stay out of people's way. Not very organized. Oh, snap. Are we? This is the headline. Newly elected Republican National Committee co-chair Laura Trump says it's time for the RNC to up its game and compete with more strategy against the Democrats. We've been playing checkers. Democrats have been playing chess, she said to the Washington Examiner. Elected Friday to replace Drew McKissick. Michael Whatley, as we've just said, the former chair of the North Carolina GOP, is now replacing Ronna McDaniel, who for far too long was terrible at her job and got a lot of unnecessary plastic surgery. Unfortunately, we don't have any one day of voting anymore. We don't have paper ballots. We don't have voter ID everywhere. So we're going to have to play the hand we are dealt, Laura Trump said, noting the importance of early voting and mail-in voting where possible. That way, we have the votes banked as we head into Election Day, and we are not playing catch-up on November 5th with the Democrats. We need to be doing legal ballot harvesting. Something that, and doesn't that bother you, that we're going to play by the rules when they're going to stuff the ballot drop boxes without a care in the world? And they can't deny it. I'm sorry, the same geo-tracking data used by True the Vote in getting all of this stuff on the 2,000 mules, people stuffing the ballot drop boxes 30 times a freaking day. It's the same technology that the DOJ and the FBI used to track down all of the January Sixers, you know. So try to refute that. Legal ballot harvesting, something that has never been done by the RNC, Laura Trump says. But I promise you, we're gonna start. All right, don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, when the Washington Post and the New York Times say it, the Democrats know there is a big problem. I will explain next. So I very rarely will read to you an article in length, but this one is so important, I think, because I think a lot of us have acknowledged and have been surprised to see how many people in our lives who weren't overtly political, because we really weren't overtly political before Donald Trump. I wasn't. I knew I was conservative. I knew how I felt. I knew how I wanted to raise my children with certain kinds of values. I knew I needed the government to stay the hell out of my life. I wanted taxes. I'd pay my fair share for things that are reasonable. But once things started going haywire and our government thought that it had a blank check just because we were the ones whose piggy banks were being broken to fund it, I became more vocal, right? And I got fired from a high profile job in television, spent several years as a mom, 4 years not working to be there, to be a full-time mom, which is one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given. And then came and stumbled into this realm of radio. And now, you know, am the number one female live streamer on Rumble. And they carry me on Newsmax. And we're all over the country on radio. And it's amazing the trajectory and the amount of people out there who just want access to information, right? So I very rarely will go deeply into too much. But this is worthwhile because I watched people in my orbit who also were not very political lose their minds over Donald Trump and then lose their minds over COVID. And this white, college-educated, liberal mentality I found very intriguing because a lot of my friends and family members fit that bill. And there was a very predictable march among them to the same beat, going in the same direction. And the further they marched and the more stoic or solid I was where I was standing, the divide between us got very deep. And there are some relationships that I lost. And that's okay. You too. It's okay. It has to happen. It is what it is. This is intriguing by the Washington Post, though. It's an opinion piece written by a guy named Jason Willick. And while I disagree with some of his takeaways, I appreciate his dive into this, and it's worthy of us sharing. This is the opinion, how the diploma divide came to dominate American politics. What is it? What is it about what has traditionally been the Democrat voter versus the Republican voter, which is now blurring and switching over to the other side? It is odd, but it's true. And I want to read you some of this because it's really palpable. And if you're on our Locals page, locals.com, just search Wendy Bell Radio. Remember, I put this rundown of all 3 hours of the show on that page. Brock does. And you can see everything I read, everything I present. And then you can go back and read it and check for yourself. It's important. You decide what you think. Here's the story. The most important U.S. political trend of this century is the march of college-educated white voters toward the Democratic Party and of non-college-educated white voters toward the GOP. This trend hasn't just changed election arithmetic. It's changed the way the right and the left argue, pushing the Democrats to embrace experts and business and the status quo as Republicans grow increasingly at odds with established institutions. Most attempts to explain the educational realignment focus on the white working class. Why did it sour on the Democratic Party? White voters without a college degree must have grown more authoritarian or racially resentful, the conventional thinking goes. George H.W. Bush won just 45% of whites without a college degree who voted for one of the two major parties in 1992. Donald Trump won 65% of that non-college educated white vote in 2020. But Bush won college educated whites by four points, while Trump lost them in 15 points in the two-party vote share. So why then does the educated, specifically the white college-educated voter, what is it about these voters that turn them off to Donald Trump or make them find somebody like Joe Biden more appealing? Well, in a recent working paper, University of Pennsylvania political scientist William Marble offers a different account of this shift based on an analysis of public opinion surveys going back decades. In his telling, whites with college degrees and not only the white working class drove this polarization process. Whites with college degrees drove the polarization process. Take economics. He says this, from at least the early 1980s until the mid-2000s, there was essentially no difference in average attitudes on economic policy between college and non-college voters, he finds. Beginning in 2004, however, college-educated white voters have moved steadily left on economic issues relative to the working class. So much, in fact, that the education gap on economics is about half as large in magnitude as the party gap was in the 1980s. Democrats have long favored more regulation and redistribution, while Republicans have favored more libertarian economic policy. I would agree with that. When they ran out John McCain and Mitt Romney to represent the GOP, I said I was done, and I switched parties. I went to the DMV for the purpose of becoming a libertarian. That's why. Democrats have long favored more regulation and redistribution. The Republicans have favored more libertarian economic policy. The GOP's focus on market economics used to be an asset among voters with college degrees. The winners in this modern economy, less so now. College-educated whites increasingly favor progressive economics, aligning them with Democrats and leaving the GOP with a more working-class voter base. So is it that the voters are leaving or that the parties have abandoned them? I don't know. There's a significant debate today, at least among journalists, about whether the Republican Party can or should move left on taxation and spending. Do you guys think that? Do you think that we should give one lousy inch when your Joe Biden administration thinks a $7.3 trillion budget is reasonable and affordable in a country that's already saddled by $34 trillion of pre-existing debt? A country whose president and whose House leadership under Democrats passed endless bloated multi-trillion dollar bill after multi-bloated trillion dollar bill during COVID, encouraging people to stay home, never get up and work again, and then bemoaning the fact that we've got some budget issues. Oh, well, I'll probably die before they get fixed. Why should we focus on it now? Certainly a GOP where the working class holds the balance of voting power will emphasize different economic policies than a Republican Party where professionals had greater influence. This is interesting, though. He says this guy's findings throw cold water on the idea that the white working class is pining for redistribute wealth and power, right? Or social justice-inspired economic policy. On the contrary, the group has moved markedly against free market economics, is white voters with college degrees. Something has happened. We blame the white college-educated liberal woman, but perhaps it's actually just the white college-educated voter in general. Because the Republicans who are white college-educated seem to be leaning more to the left than ever before. Perhaps it's just the working person, the person who gets up every day, regardless of their race. I mean, specifically, we're talking about white people, white Republicans, white college-educated Republicans. What happened? Is it the indoctrination of college? Is it something that they're learning there? Is it the constant beating in the head in staff and administration teaching that's 90% or more liberal in these college campuses and universities? I almost choked when I got a copy of my Coloradan magazine from the University of Colorado in Boulder. And it showed a picture of a guy on the cover who was being championed as the lone Republican staff member who was brought specifically to the university for a year for a little diversity. Everybody there is on the left. They have to bring in visiting professors, like exchange programs, so they get some diversity of thought and ideology. This is exactly what it is. And so I scratch my head and I have to wonder, is college worth it? Is sending your children to college worth it? I have a child right now waiting. We'll find out by the end of this week whether or not he's been invited to attend the University of Notre Dame. Do you know how hard it is as a white, straight, conservative boy, man now, to get entrance into a school like Notre Dame, to get into a school like Harvard or Vanderbilt or Chapel Hill or any of these institutions or Berkeley? We're creating a vortex, I believe. We're creating the storm by not addressing the issues rampant in education. This article suggests that the move isn't because of Democrats. It's because of Republicans. there is an effect on those college campuses. How do you neutralize it? How do you neutralize it? For example, this analysis suggests that in the 2000 presidential election, non-college whites placed roughly half as much weight on moral issues as did college-educated whites. But by 2020, they placed slightly higher weight on the dimension than did the college graduates. Cultural attitudes on race and moral traditionalism are now drivers of vote choice for both the working and professional class. Is this a white thing? We already know what the black voters are doing. They're waking up. It seems like it's the white college-educated voters who are still asleep. I think that's fascinating. Identify the issue. Find a fix. I don't know what it is, but we got to find it. All right, quick timeout when we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program. Let's talk about this. This New York Times poll says Donald Trump's support among black voters has grown 500%. So what do they see that white voters don't? Next on the Wendy Bell Radio program. Fascinating New York Times poll. We've talked about it a little bit. This Trump support among black voters. It's curious to see trends. It's curious to go up to your cruising altitude of about 30,000 feet and look down and to see the landscape and see how people move here or there and what sorts of issues get them moving in different circles and to different sides. And it's intriguing to see how some people are really, really affected by media and others can't be at all. It's weird. Black voters, I think they're done. I think you're going to have your base. You're going to have your core. You're going to have the people who are going to be hardcore no matter what. They know the party has changed. They know that it doesn't represent their values anymore. But you're going to have Democrats, black Democrats, who will vote that way because it's what it's always been. It's what their parents and grandparents did. It is in their community. And when somebody like Joe Biden says, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, maybe that's not offensive. The same way when I listen to Katie Britt give the Republican response, I listened to a mother. I did not listen to a woman who was being overly dramatic. I did not perceive drama or acting. And a whole lot of other people did. I would venture to say I would be in the minority. Because what she said in almost tears, talking about the issues at the border, talking about the issues around the dining table, talking about the issues of drugs and the challenges of raising children, knowing that we will not be capable in this current situation to give to our children the American dream that was promised and delivered to us. And you have to go do something with it. But I felt that. That spoke to me on a deeply visceral level. And it totally was lost by a lot of other people. But this is an intriguing story. The website is called unheard.com. Donald Trump's support among black voters has grown by nearly 500% in the last 4 years. This new New York Times Siena poll, really not that new. It's now over a week old, but it drills down on some of this granular data, if you will. Former president's support among black voters is now. This is crazy. I mean, This is crazy. This is foreboding. This is tragic for the Democratic Party. I mean, is this why the spigot of humanity coming across is on full bore? Come in. We need the numbers. We need people. We need you in the census so that we can create enough ballots based on the humanity who've come here. Whether or not we're registering you to vote, we need you counted. So that we can redistrict, so we can lie and say way more people voted for us than did. I mean, there's just no way 81 million people would have ever voted for Joe Biden. I mean, he chose the biggest dip for a partner, for a running mate. I mean, zero. Woman brings zero. No skill, no grace, no class, no ideas. She's a dope. Woof. And is this the black voters here saying, yeah, I'm done? It sounds like it. The turnaround in opinion among one of the Democrats' most reliable voting blocks is a worrying sign. Yeah, for Joe Biden's reelection prospects. He secured 92 of the black vote in the 2020 election. 92. The highest out of any minority group in the country, if you believe any of that. But growing disillusionment with the president's first term and concerns about his age threaten to undermine the Democrats' strong relationship with black voters. Listen to this just collapse. Since the midterms, there has been little indication that those voters are coming back to the Democratic Party. A notable 22 percentage points, black young voters have moved 22 percentage points towards Republicans. Inflation, obviously a top issue for black voters, has since fallen, they say in this article. But food, gas, and rent, all of the prices remain way too high. Since the midterms, there's been little indication that those voters are coming back. In fact, more appear to be drifting in the opposite direction. In a separate poll last month, Gallup found that among black Americans expressing a party preference, the Democratic lead over Republicans has dropped by almost 20% in only 3 years. That's crazy. In October 2020, the New York Times poll then found only 4% of support for Trump. 4% black support for Trump. He went on to secure double that figure, got 8% in that November election. Based on the most recent poll, it seems likely he would build on those gains with support growing among other minority groups as well. He's also winning Latino votes outright over Joe Biden, 46 to 40%, marking a. This is the point I want to drive home. 39% point swing in the last 4 years. Biden won the Latino vote in 2020, 65 to 32. Trump is now leading him by six, 46 to 40. Though black Americans are by no means abandoning the current president, these polls are further confirmation that the voter bloc is not as reliable for the Democrats as it once was. Well, the Democrats are in luck because white college-educated Republicans are leaning that way. Are we going to see not just a fracturing of the Republican Party from GOP to MAGA and RINO? Or are we going to see a fracturing of the GOP from MAGA to progressive Democrat? That's what it looks like. What it looks like to me. This is fascinating because it could very well be the voters that the Democrats have used and abused for generations who end up screwing them and giving the White House back to Donald Trump. All right, Robert Hur testifying before House Judiciary. Robert Hur resigned from the DOJ just hours ago. And oh my gosh, their pants are on fire. I can't wait to tell you all of the implications. Hour number three of the Wendy Bell Radio program coming up next.